Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Julius Baer's Moving Markets podcast. It's Monday, the 22nd of April. My name is Bernadette Anderko. Today, we'll have Roman Canciani providing the wrap of the latest market actions for us and a special appearance on the show by Richard Tang, who heads up our Hong Kong research department, and he's going to update us on some of the interesting developments in Asian markets. Before we get into the detail of today's show, I would just like to bring your attention to a new Beyond Markets podcast that my colleague Helen Freer published last week, and that's entitled Semiconductors and the Future of AI. The innovation of the semiconductor industry has undoubtedly enabled huge advances in artificial intelligence, but where do we go from here, and will more efficient and better performing chips be enough to satisfy the requirements of AI models? Helen interviewed our next generation analyst, Luca Manozzi, to find out more and also to discover what the transition to a new era in computing architecture might mean for the future of AI. And in the German edition, my colleague Jan Bopp talked to Carsten Menker, and you can find that podcast on the Markt, Analysen und Gespräche podcast channel. So, having butchered the German language, let's get on to today's business and kick off with the market's news. Good morning, Roman.
Good morning, Bernadette.
Let's start the week by putting things into perspective, Roman. Both the news flow and the market action have not been great as of late. The S&P 500 in the US has just delivered its worst weekly performance since March last year, falling more than 3%. In the case of the Nasdaq, it was even more. It lost more than 5.5% last week. And in comparison, the losses across the US Treasury curve look pretty small, but still, rather than the tensions in the Middle East, it was interest rates and in particular changing rate cut expectations which ruled the markets, right?
Yes, you're absolutely right, Bernadette. And indeed, it was mainly the changing central bankers' opinions on the path of monetary policy along with all the solid economic data last week that roiled the markets. And one of the major reasons for this, and this is what many analysts are pointing out, was the much more downbeat tone of most of the Fed speakers, in particular with regard to the start of the rate cutting cycle. This just shows the data dependency of Fed officials when it comes to explaining their own expectations for the future path of monetary policy.
Okay, I see where you're coming from then. You're saying that central bankers themselves seem to have little conviction about when and if rate cuts can and will be cut this year, right?
Yes, indeed. If you compare what Fed officials were saying a month ago with what they are saying today, there's a big difference. And that is mainly because most of the latest data underline the picture of an economy in reasonably good shape and still sticky inflation. The only thing that seems clear to most market participants is that the European Central Bank is likely to be the first to cut rates, probably at the beginning of June, followed by the Bank of England, perhaps in August, and the Federal Reserve starting in September. But again, the situation remains fluid and any new data, be it on inflation or growth, could change this view.
Well, then I guess it comes in handy that there are so many important data points this week. So I see on the global front, we've got flash PMIs tomorrow, Tuesday, with the German and French data being of particular interest as both missed last month. What else is there?
Yes, looking ahead, the most important data is likely to be the first reading on US Q1 GDP due on Thursday, which is expected to come in at plus 2.4%, and the US PCE inflation figures on Friday, which are expected to come in at 2.6%. But there's more. We'll see a number of high-octane US Treasury auctions, which will be a test for the markets. And we'll also have a lot of earnings reports this week. 178 companies of the S&P 500 are expected to report this week, among them Tesla, Alphabet, Meta, and Microsoft, four of the Magnificent Seven stocks. And these are equally likely to move markets in one or the other direction.
Well, it actually seems they already move markets on Friday, right?
Indeed, tech stocks led the declines on Friday. The Nasdaq closed down around 2%, its worst trading day of the year, with the market's AI darlings Nvidia and Supermicro Computer down more than 2%. But the other tech and AI-related stocks were also down sharply. Market observers say that it seems that investors simply wanted to take some chips off the table ahead of the Magnificent Seven earnings reports, as expectations are very high for that cohort, up 38% on average. And the market is expecting not only huge earnings, but also very strong guidance. But interestingly, while both the S&P 500 and the Nasdaq were in deep negative territory, the less tech-heavy Dow Jones Industrials Index and the even-weighted version of the S&P 500, which is based on capped individual company weights, both ended Friday in positive territory, so not all negative there at all.
The other elephant in the room for financial markets is, of course, geopolitical risk, which seemed to increase almost by the day last week. Was there any developments there over the weekend?
Well, Friday's flight to safety bid was already losing traction during the trading hours, so neither gold nor oil nor US Treasury yields, some of the traditional safe haven assets, have moved much. And this morning, they're all trading around the same levels as on Friday, even a little bit lower. So gold is down about 1% at $2,365 per ounce. A barrel of Brent crude is trading at $86.50, lower than at the start of last week. And 10-year US Treasuries are yielding 4.65 in Asian hours this morning.
Speaking about Asian trading hours, how have financial markets in the Asia-Pacific region kicked off the week?
Yes, most Asian markets are up this morning in what seems to be a relief rally as tensions in the Middle East have calmed a bit over the weekend. As in the US, it's the semiconductor stocks that are dragging the markets down at the moment, but the overall mood is positive. The leader on the board is Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index, up 2% when I checked a few minutes ago. But we'll have Richard on in a moment to tell us more about the Asian markets.
Indeed. So then lastly, what should investors be aware of today, Raymond?
Well, not much data is expected today, with Eurozone consumer confidence data for April due later in the day. But a number of European central bankers will be on the record, including the ECB's Christine Lagarde and the Bank of England's Benjamin. In terms of trading action, both European and US markets seem to be able to build on the lead from Asia, with US stock market futures comfortably in positive territory for the time being. That's it from me.
Thank you so much for being on the show and for the interesting roundup this morning, Roman.
Thank you very much, Bernadette.
So traditionally on a Monday, we have Mensur Pachinci with us to talk about technical developments. If you're waiting for him, you'll need to rewind to last Friday's podcast when he talked to Helen about whether or not the sell in May and go away adage applies this year. This Monday, we have Richard Tang joining us from Hong Kong. So I guess I should say good evening, Richard.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Bernadette.
So, Richard, there's always something timely to discuss when it comes to Asian markets. This time around, we had the Chinese regulators announcing measures on Friday to support the Hong Kong stock market. Do you see this as a positive development, and is it indeed going to help boost market activities?
Indeed, we never run out of headlines when it comes to the Hong Kong-China market. And the measures that you just mentioned was the main reason why the Hang Seng Index up 2% today. And I think to give you a little bit of background, the Hong Kong market has been running on fairly dry liquidity and thin turnover for, I think, 1 or 2 years already. So those measures are basically targeting and boosting the turnover of the Hong Kong market. I'm not going to get into the details of those five measures, but the core of that is basically to expand the so-called Connect scheme of the exchanges between Hong Kong and mainland China. And the Connect scheme basically is a special mechanism allowing the investors on both sides to invest in stocks on each other. So the Hong Kong investors can invest in the stocks in Shanghai and Shenzhen through the Connect scheme and vice versa for the investors in mainland. And the announcement today basically is to expand the scale of the Connect scheme. In the past, the Connect scheme only includes a large amount of stocks plus a handful of ETF. But this time, they're relaxing the criteria of inclusion of ETFs. So now we are expanding the number of ETFs included from 8 to basically 15. Because we are now relaxing the criteria in terms of the AUM as well as the underlying assets. So that's a positive in development. They are also including REITs into ETF eligible list. But I think we have to be fair to say that the ETF and the REITs are a fairly small part of the turnover. So I would say the impact is basically just marginal. I would think that this is going to help the stock market for a few days. Beyond that, we will be back to the basic fundamental and other relevant factors.
Okay, so then on that basis, Richard, what would be your strategy on the Chinese market from this level?
Yeah, tactically, a few investors were arguing, which we share a bit of sympathy, that when the US and Japan markets are consolidating, there might be some benefits to the China market from a flow rotation perspective. Clearly, we don't rule out that possibility in the near term. But beyond a few weeks of time, I think the market still looks at fundamental. And then we have to focus back on earnings. We're currently in the Q1 reporting season. The Q4 reporting season that's just over, I would say, in line, but still showing some weak trends. So we have to see any improvements from the Q1 2024 reporting season. One thing I do have to mention is that even though we got a lot of measures on the stock market front, including the ones that we just talked about, the fiscal measures are still fairly light. So we're not putting a lot of expectation on the economy. I think it will still be sort of slowly accelerating or slowly recovering rather than any boost from the government. So in that sense, we would favor alpha, i.e. specific stock ideas, specific thematic ideas, over beta, i.e. the overall market conditions. And the particular thematic ideas that we would recommend in the China stock market would still be the dividend theme, sale enterprises, a consumption downgrade, as well as quality stocks. For the broader Asia region, even though Japan market is consolidating along with the tech stocks in Korea and Taiwan, we still like these three markets as our major overweights in Asia, along with India in the South Asian market. I think for Japan, we're still fairly confident that the fundamentals are improving. The improvements are coming along as you see that the wage growth is indeed being delivered. Also, we think that the foreign flow into Japan is still fairly light compared to, you know, 10 years ago during the Abenomics time. So we think there's still room for foreign investors to get into Japan. And I think most importantly, the reform from the Tokyo Stock Exchange basically showing progress. And that's why we remain confident on the Japan market. And not to mention the fact that we're now not forecasting a lot of appreciation in Japanese yen. So I think for those who worry about, you know, yen up, equity down, I think that would be a relief to them. So I think Japan is still our top pick in the Asian region markets.
Wow, that was a really comprehensive study of Asia there in just 2 minutes. Thank you so much, Richard. Thanks for your insights and for joining the show today. Hopefully we can get you back on again soon.
Thank you, Bernadette. Speak soon.
So that's it for today. Thank you again to today's guests, and thank you all for tuning in. And of course, please do join us again tomorrow when we'll be back to guide you through more of what's moving markets. Good luck today, indeed, good luck this week, and goodbye for now.
The information and opinions expressed in this podcast constitute marketing material and are not the result of independent financial or investment research. Please refer to www.juliasbear.com/legal/podcasts for further other important legal information.
Beyond Markets is a weekly podcast where Julius Baer experts and external speakers discuss some of the latest market developments. They share their key research and insights on today's ever-changing economic landscape and present practical advice. Search for Beyond Markets on your favorite podcast player.